This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Monday afternoon, April 15th. It's tax day. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. On this deadline day to file tax returns, it's a good time to start thinking about next year, and we'll discover why in our next segment. But right now, the latest report on retail sales out today, while the week ahead will include key data from the housing market. We're also keeping an eye on the conflict in the Middle East and its potential impact on the global economy. Let's discuss all of that with Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and economic futurist at andrewbush.com. Andy, thank you for joining us today. And let's talk about that retail sales report, jumping 0.7% in March, much higher than expected. And of course, we're paying more at the gas pump from coast to coast. So how much of that, Andy, was a function of gas prices, and how much of that was a function of consumers who still feel good about spending?
Yeah, it's a combination of both, obviously. So gas prices were up. That kind of jacked the retail sales number up a little bit, 2.1% at service stations. The biggest growth area was online sales, though, at 2.7%, and miscellaneous retailers saw an increase of 2.1%. So consumers are spending. Where they're not spending, though, is on sporting goods, hobbies, musical instruments, books, things like that. Even clothing stores were off, and electronic and appliances were down a bit. So it's a little bit of a hard to figure out. But the bottom line on this thing is that interest rates are not coming down. They're going up. GDP is around 3%, 2.8 to 3%. And unemployment is for 2 years below 4%. Again, why would the Federal Reserve cut interest rates if this is going on and they're not meeting their inflation targets? So great number. Good things are happening in the economy. Just rates are not going to go down.
Obviously, people spending money is a good thing. It is a sign of economic health. But you mentioned that people might be spending money on essentials, and they're not spending money on their hobbies. They're not going out and buying that expensive model train. They are not buying that saxophone. And what does that potentially tell a story?
Well, it's just winners and losers to some extent. The good news is that earnings have held up very well for laborers in the United States. That's great news. The rate of average hourly earnings is above the rate of inflation. That's also good news. That helps keep retail spending up, which is good, or consumer spending up. So that's good as well. And the unemployment rate below 4%. Look, the bottom line is this. Like, I don't see a recession this year anywhere in sight. That's great news. And it means that people are going to have jobs, they're going to have money, and they're going to keep spending. So it's not a bad thing. The worst part about all of this is clearly inflation, and that's running at 3.5% clip. That's the biggest problem for the economy and also for President Biden.
And then very quickly on the events over the weekend, the drone and missile attack from Iran on Israel was very choreographed, very telegraphed, and easily repelled. And how does that factor into a geopolitical risk on the global economy?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest things of risks that are out there for most businesses. This is what they're worried about, but it hasn't really translated into oil prices, soaring. But it's a dangerous situation. And yes, the Iranian response was measured. We'll have to see what Israel does. If they react, then it's tit for tat, and we'll see how far it goes. But that's the worry right now. Things have calmed down a little bit. We'll see where they go from here.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com in Charlotte. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, making next tax season a lot easier to navigate. It's 12:08, traffic and weather together on the 8th, sponsored by Next Door and Window. And here's Abby Ryan.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Today marks deadline day for filing tax returns, and it's the perfect occasion to start preparing for next year. year. Let's get some help from Dan Rahill, wealth strategist, Wintrust Wealth Management in Chicago. Dan, thank you for joining us today. And it's an annual tradition, Dan, in the broadcast news industry to send reporters to the post office late in the evening to talk to the people who are going to file or get their tax returns in the mail and postmarked before that 11:59 deadline. But we are going the next level. We're going to take care of next year's tax returns, and you can do that starting today.
Sure, Rob. If you're one of the 101 million taxpayers through April 5th that's already filed their return, not one of the 19 million of you that are extending today, but if you've already filed your return, sit down with your return after it's filed and take a look at a couple of things. First of all, do you have carryovers going to next year, such as a capital loss carry forward, or a passive loss carry forward, or a charitable contribution carry forward? And what that means is, because you can only deduct capital losses up to $3,000 in a given year, and you had losses this year, those carried over to the future. Same with other deductions. If you have a passive real estate investment and you're tracking those losses going forward, if you dispose of that investment, that triggers all those prior losses going back years and years into the current year, 2024. So those are some of the planning things that your current tax return will tell you to do going forward. So take a look at it. Another thing is itemized deductions. Did you hit it or did you miss it? A lot of people with the increased itemized deductions that will go through 2025, if you're a married couple this year, you need to exceed 29,200 of itemized deductions. Sometimes people miss that number. So that tells you, when you're building your file for 2024, should I bunch my deductions, meaning should I accelerate certain deductions into 2024 that might go into 2025 and beyond, such as charitable deductions? Those are the sorts of things, your tax return, that should be in your file that you can track during the year that'll help you at the end of the year with your planning.
We're talking about how you can prepare for next year's tax filing season with Dan Rahill, wealth strategist, Wintrust Wealth Management in Chicago. Now, let's say your personal income tax return is not as complicated. It's just the basic stuff. But you find that maybe you're paying more than you should. And is this a good time to also take a look at your withholding and possibly have a little more withheld from your paychecks? You're not experiencing sticker shock when tax time rolls around.
Absolutely, Rob. You can adjust your W-4 with your employer and increase your withholding or decrease the number of exemptions you have claimed for dependents. That will increase your withholding. It's better cash management towards the end of the year. Not necessarily the best present value use of your money, but if you don't like writing a big check at the end of the year to the IRS, increase your withholding.
And then lastly, talk taxes with your spouse. I cannot think of anything that is more romantic, Dan, but it can certainly benefit the both of you as the year goes on.
Absolutely. Talk to your spouse. Anticipate any changes in your life that could happen. Birth of a baby, death of a family member and an inheritance, things along those lines. Anticipate those as a family, and that'll help you plan for the rest of the year.
Dan Rahill, wealth strategist, Wintrust Wealth Management in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, scoping out the summer job season in the Chicago area.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's mid-April, and that means time is running out for high school and college students and grads to secure jobs this summer. Let's find out how things are shaping up with Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert for Robert Half. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And the last couple of summers, just as a result of the labor crunch, if you were a teenager in search of a summer job, you basically had the run of everything. You could command your own price. You could set businesses off against each other. You could make more than any teenager has made in a summer job outside of Henry Hill and Goodfellas. Do those conditions still persist in 2024?
They do still persist. Oh, to be a teenager again. You know, recent reports and studies that we've done with companies show that 57% are planning to hire just in the first half of the year, and 64% of that 57% plan to hire new grads. So it is still a great time to be looking for an entry-level role.
And I'm sure if you were driving around this weekend, I certainly noticed this in my corner of suburbia, that the local ice cream shop was doing a great business, especially this weekend, just because of the great weather. When we talk about jobs for teenagers, are we still talking about the golf course, the Dairy Queen, or are we also talking about office or temporary work?
Absolutely. You know, all of the service industry, hospitality industry is always looking. But as companies in 8-to-5 roles still struggle to find good talent, they are very open to entry-level candidates that, you know, may have great soft skills or interpersonal skills that they would be willing to train on the hard skills. And so, you know, whether you're looking for a nights and weekend job or an 8-to-5 job, there are plenty of opportunities available for, you know, all candidates.
We're talking about securing that teenage summer job with Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. We joke about how previous summers, teenagers going into the summer job market were able to command their own price. But what is a realistic ask? I mean, what's doing well for yourself and what's being counterproductive by being too clever by half?
Yeah, you know, I think depending on the job, whether, again, it's that, you know, ice cream shop job or an office job, the key thing is you've got to do your research. And so look at job postings, job openings, things, you know, talk to your friends. What are they making, you know, working at the ice cream shop or working at ABC Company and, you know, the customer service department? Know what your worth is, but know competitively what salaries are paying so that, yes, you don't go in with this attitude of, well, I know this company needs help, so I'm going to ask for the moon and hope to get hired. Companies are still being very competitive today, so you will definitely get a good pay, but you want to go in there knowledgeable about, you know, what is competitive pay in whatever role that you're applying for.
And then very quickly, Michelle, how can you be purposeful in your summer job search and try to look at it as a springboard into a career versus just a way to make some spending money during the summer months?
That's a really great point, is that you want to focus on growth opportunities or maybe a great culture fit. Look at the big picture. What is it? What job will I do today that may help me land that ideal first permanent job straight out of college? And so look at professional development or companies that are willing to train to help you get into the job that you ultimately want to.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert, the Robert Half Company, still ahead. Strategies to fill up the college fund, plus a pair of suggestions from our Monday stock picker. Topping our news at the half hour, no one's in custody following a weekend shooting in Chicago's Back of the Yards neighborhood that left a young girl dead. 10 people, including 3 other children, were wounded. Jose Molina's 9-year-old daughter, Ariana, died after she was shot in the head. Jose tells CBS2.
I got shot in my leg and my feet, but I'm okay. He just came in and out, but like I said, I don't care about my leg. Just my daughter, she was too young for this.
The shooting took place during a family confirmation party on Saturday night. For the first time in U.S. history, a former president is now facing a criminal trial.
Jury selection is now underway here in Manhattan Criminal Court. Donald Trump spoke just outside the courtroom ahead of this trial beginning, calling it a political attack.
It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country. And it's a country that's failing.
Outside the courthouse, several dozen Trump supporters. There's no telling how long it may take to whittle down from 500 prospective jurors to just over a dozen. Matt Piper, CBS News, New York.
Hey, it's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower right now. Welcome in J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today. And what is driving this sudden about-face in the markets?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. This morning, everybody was breathing a sigh of relief, if you will, in terms of, okay, it looks like we may be able to come to some sort of a negotiation, if you will, on this crisis in the Middle East. While at the same time, you had Goldman Sachs coming out with earnings that were really spectacular in terms of what was some of the expectations. And then all of a sudden, I think people went, well, hold on, nothing in the Middle East has been solved. These things don't settle overnight. And I think just some of the optimism there has just continued to fade throughout the day, if you will. And so it's really, you know, it's been a very sudden move here in the last hour or so to the downside and the overall markets. And, you know, now we're at a point where it starts to become a little bit concerning for those of you, you know, your listeners who are listening at home. I think one of the really key areas we're going to want to watch as we head into the close is this 5,100 area on the S&P 500. We're below it right now. I think it would be really positive if we could rally back into the close and be above it on the close of the day.
And then how do you interpret today's March retail sales report? I mean, it's kind of the push and pull of interest rates. I mean, obviously, investors have been waiting for years for that first rate cut, and it sounds like they will continue to wait. But they can tolerate that as long as the consumer delivers profits for them, and the retail sales report that indicates that the consumer is game for just that.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as we continue to see the jobs number match that, Rob, I think you're in a place exactly as you can say. People may not love it, but they're not fully unhappy as long as we can continue to create jobs. The disconnect is going to be when, you know, the job numbers start to fade, because then it's like, okay, is it, you know, are retail sales going to be able to continue at that pace? But the other end of it is, as you know, we've seen in a lot of the reports over the last few weeks, retail sales numbers are good, but unfortunately, a lot of the other goods that and services that people are buying have gone up pretty significantly in price over the last 6 months or so. Also, you know, starting with the cost, of course, of gasoline and car insurance.
We're talking today's market activity with J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America and president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. Geopolitical events were on the front page over the weekend simply because Iran launched a cruise missile and drone attack on Israel. And even though the vast majority of those aircraft were shot down thanks to Israel's missile defense system and also thanks to assistance from some of its Arab neighbors, that attack was repelled. When you're talking about geopolitical threats and assessing how they will impact the market, how deep in the weeds of a particular conflict do you get as an investor, or you just see the idea as a conflict being a risk factor and that's it?
Well, conflict's a risk factor. I would say this one may be a little bit higher. And for that, I'll go back to the comments we saw out of Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan, on Friday, where he specifically called this particular conflict out even maybe a little bit more than the Ukraine-Russian one. And the fact is, as he said, there are so many things to consider right now. Usually a CEO really focuses on one or two different events as outcomes. He said there are so many outcomes to focus in on right now. And this, you know, geopolitical conflict now being one of the major ones that could really disrupt not only prices, but supply chains. You know, when you talk about the Middle East, all of a sudden the price of gasoline through crude oil becomes a major concern also. The one calming thing I guess I would say for the listeners today is I look at the VIX, which measures volatility in the index. To me, when it gets above 20, that's when you start to see a real warning sign. Up about 8.5% today, but it's still only at the 1882 level. So, you know, this could also be all right. We had an incredible run-up. Some of it could just be blamed on a little bit of a sell-off in terms of people taking some profits and reassessing their next move.
J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, making sure you're prepared to pay for college.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As families proudly celebrate graduations this spring, they may already be looking at the next generation of students and what it will take financially to pay for their college education. Let's discuss strategy with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. Graduations, bar and bat mitzvahs, communions, confirmations. This is the season for kids to get cards with cash inside. And you can probably do more with it than buy something really cool for the Nintendo Switch.
Yes, and there's a couple really good, of course, I always have my financial hat on, and there's something that is really beneficial, especially for the high school grads, the eighth grade, the bar and bat mitzvahs, confirmation, and that is, if you live in Illinois, the Bright Start 529 plan. That's a plan that can be used for college. The account is opened. It could be by a grandparent or a parent or an aunt or uncle, and the beneficiary would be the child. The advantage is that that money will grow tax-free, as long as it's used for college expenses in the future. So it is a great gift to give to these high school eighth grade graduations.
And then one thing that some parents are contemplating around this time, especially if they have kids below the age of 10, is setting up a checking account for them or a savings account at the bank. What is the best way to go about doing that to make sure that that communion money or that graduation money doesn't lose value over time?
Yeah, if it's money for short term, probably I would set up a savings account. I think giving a 10-year-old a checking account is probably not a great idea, but you'll be setting it up as a custodial account. So the parent or whoever, any guardian, would be on the account so they can make sure that money doesn't go the right way, the wrong way. And right now, a lot of banks are paying pretty high interest rates, so you could probably get 4 or 5%. If it's longer term, you can open an account at Schwab or Fidelity and start a brokerage account, which you can handle some investments in there if it's really long term.
And then, let's talk about the investment account idea. And how much work do you have to do as a parent to maintain that? Because we joke about the idea of your 10-year-old, posting up at the movie theater and writing a check to go see Ghostbusters. But, can they become a stock market tycoon at the age of 10? Or can you at the very least teach them the principles of investing?
Yeah, I think it's more the principles of investing. They probably won't be a tycoon at age 10. But my advice would be to open an account and put it in something called an indexed fund, like the S&P 500, maybe add a indexed bond fund in there. But what's nice is that you can sit with your child and go through the statements and show how the markets do go up and they do go down. But over the long term, they tend to go up. So it's a good lesson. Maybe the child has a favorite company they want to watch or put a stock in. But for the majority of it, I would put it in a diversified, low-cost mutual fund.
And then when you go through, at least as far as your clients are concerned, any assets that their children may have, are birthdays, graduations, religious observances, are they the most common source of seed money, as it were, to get those college and other savings accounts off the ground?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. I think it's a beautiful gift. It sends a great message, and it's a gift that the child, if they're 10, they're going to appreciate in 8 years or 10 years because college costs are getting really expensive. And the more they can save, the less loans they'll have to take for college. So I think it's really a beautiful gift. And the person that puts money in the 529, remember, they're the owner. They get up to $10,000. They get a state deduction per person. So married couples would get $20,000. And that's the state tax. So, the 5%, you don't get the full $10,000 back in your taxes. But it's just a beautiful gift. It's a great way to send a message. You know, if you put the money in a brokerage or custodial account, you let it sit there for 10 years, hopefully it'll grow. And when you use it for college, there's some taxes to be paid. So the 529 grows tax-free, and it also helps if you're ever applying for financial aid. Usually there's less of an impact with a 529 versus a custodial account. But with the 529, you still have to make investment choices. My favorite is something called the age-based investments. It's an investment in indexed age-based. It's an investment of index funds based on your age. So when the child is 3 or 4, there's a lot higher percentage to stocks. As they get older, 16, 17, it starts to click down, and there's a lot more in bonds, which gives you the stability. But again, that could be a learning experience for the child as well, because you can sit down and show how the account's going up or down. So it is a beautiful gift. I'm a big fan of the 529 plan.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Stock Picker Monday, and helping us out today is Matt Shapiro, president, MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. Two selections, starting with the stock that is very much in the news today, Matt.
Tesla down 4.5% today on 10% workforce reductions, kind of hinted about that they're going to stop production potentially of the low-cost car. A lot of controversy. Stock's been one of the worst in the S&P 500. But for us, you know, it's a story, I think, that if you remember last year, many major tech companies started to cut headcounts, and they recovered strongly because they're focusing on the bottom line. Same thing with Tesla. Now, of course, a very controversial stock. But I think with this workforce reduction, earnings are next week. I think we're going to see the worst of the news. And for, you know, more intrepid investors want to buy something that's down, Tesla is still a major, major company and major factor in EVs.
And then your next selection is one of the stalwarts of American industry, headquartered in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yes, Alcoa Corporation, largest U.S. producer of aluminum. Now, Alcoa is a tiny company, about $7.5 billion when compared to something like Tesla. However, they produce about half of the United States aluminum production, and aluminum's recently been spiking up from more and more sanctions on Russian production. Secondly, the largest producer and consumer of aluminum is China, and China stimulus programs seem to be working. Remember, we are in an economic boom. I know a lot of people don't think about that, but you know, retail sales were extremely strong. So a lot of fundamentals behind rising metals prices. Alcoa directly capitalizes on that.
So the two selections today, Alcoa, AA, the ticker symbol, and Tesla, TSLA. And then very quickly on your Tesla pick, Matt, this seems like the play here is to potentially get a high-value stock at a discounted price just because of the bad news that's been coming out today.
Lots of bad news, and then, you know, we'll see the earnings report. Expected to be about 50 cents a share, which is still about $1.8 billion. They make a lot of money, but, I mean, they'll probably pack, you know, all the bad news into it, including a charge for the layoffs. However, I agree with the moves. For instance, cutting the cheaper car, people don't, first of all, buy cheap cars anymore. They're all $40,000 or $50,000, which is in Tesla's wheelhouse. Complaints about aging model lineup, disagree. The refreshes look great. These models can continue for years and years with updates and refreshes. So still very positive about Tesla, obviously a very volatile stock.
Matt Shapiro, president, MWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of the Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.